Now, while the king was putting on his feast, his wife, Queen Vashti, was putting on a feast of her own. Now, doubtless, Vashti justified herself and thought, well, I'm helping the king out. He's putting on his feast, and I'm putting on my feast. A lovely basis for a married life. And here was this king and the queen. They were going to manifest the glory of the realm. Look at us, the king and queen. Mind you, we're running two separate feasts, but after all, perhaps we get on a little better that way. Nevertheless, the two feasts went along quite well, until King Darius, or I have your ears as he is called here, decided that he would like his wife to come along to his feast, because he considered that she was the crowning element of his glory. He manifested the glory of his realm unto all the nations, but he said, look, I've got one crowning feature which you haven't seen yet, and it's my wife. My bride is the crowning feature of my glory. Now he says, Vashti, come along to my feast. He doesn't go to her direct, he sends seven chamberlains. And the seven chamberlains, Megumen, Biztar, Habona, Bagster, Abagster, Zithar, and Karkas, the seven chamberlains, they go along and they say to Vashti, will you come on and grace your husband's feast? Because you are the crowning element of his glory. And she says, no, I'm too busy. I'm too busy putting on a feast of my own. There's no intimation here of anything as the Gentile commentators suggest. They suggest that this was just a drunken orgy, that the king desired that the queen should come along and array and display herself clothed simply in her crown, and that it was quite a disgraceful show. But there's no suggestion of this at all. It says here in verse 10 that on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry. Now this doesn't mean he was drunk. The word merry is a Hebrew word tob, which signifies to be happy or to be elevated. This is the significance of the Hebrew word. Not necessarily intoxicated, but to be good, cheerful, or at ease. Now this is what the king was. He was quite happy, and he would have been much happier if his wife came along and displayed her glory. Now that's all she had to do. But she said to the chamberlain, you go back and tell the king I'm too busy. I'm putting on my own feet. I'm manifesting my glory. I'm not interested in yours. She might have justified it by all sorts of things. He might have said, well, I'm helping him. I'm doing what I think is right. Mind you, he wants me to do that, but I think I know better. I know how I can manifest the glory of the realm better than he does. And so she wouldn't come. And what a shocking state the king was in. Here he was. Everyone had accepted the fact that his kingdom was a glorious one. But his wife wouldn't obey him. What could he do? And so he was perplexed. The 12 told him verse 12, the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment. So verse 13, the king said to the wise men, which knew the time, for so was the king's manner toward all that knew law and judgment. And he named the seven princes, Kashina, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marcena, Memucan, the seven princes who saw the king's face. These were the men who dwelt in the presence of the king, who saw the king's face. They were his counselors. And he said unto them, look what's happened. My glory is at stake in the face of all my subjects. My wife has disobeyed me. What can I do about it? He asked them this question in verse 15. What shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to the law? Because she hath not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlain. And so they went into consultation. And they came up with this solution. Verse 17, this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes, when it shall be reported, the king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she didn't come. Likewise shall all the ladies or the princesses of Persia and Media say this day unto all the king's princes which have heard of the deed of the queen. Thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath. In other words, you can't control your own wife. How can you rule us? What are we going to do about it? Verse 19. If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And so the decree was issued, and it was sent out by the post. Now that's the story. The king desirous of manifesting his glory. His wife to be the crowning element of his glory, and she refused to hearken. What are we going to do with her? Divorce her. True, she might be beautiful. The word Vashti signifies just this. The word Vashti means a beautiful woman. To all outward intents and purposes, she was beautiful. But inwardly, she was corrupt. She was stubborn. She was rebellious. She was conceited. She was arrogant and proud. And she failed to recognize that her position of glory was not due to anything which she had of herself, but only because of her husband's position and of the position to which he had elevated her. What is the lesson? The lesson is this. We want to consider this carefully. You might find that some of this, you might think it's a little bit far-fetched at the moment. I feel quite convinced, brethren and sisters, that by the time we get on two or three chapters more, you won't be at all. But the picture which is presented to us is this. The one who really rules over the kingdom of men is not Darius. It's not Alexander the Great. It's not Nebuchadnezzar. But it's the God of heaven and earth. Yahweh himself is the great king who really rules over the kingdom of men. He is desirous that his glory shall be manifested unto the nations. And how is he going to do it? He's going to manifest his glory through a bride. God himself has taken a bride. And we're told of this in the scripture. If we turn over to Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 32, Jeremiah tells us of this bride which Yahweh himself has taken. Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 32. He's speaking here of a future age. He's speaking of the time when Israel shall be glorified and blessed. He's speaking about the time when a new covenant will be made with them. And he says in verse 32, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was an husband unto them, said Yahweh. Now here is the picture of the parable. God himself took a nation and he said, they will be my bride. I will be their husband. Isaiah presents us with a similar picture. Isaiah in chapter 54 and at verse 5 gives us a further insight into this symbol of the parable. 54th of Isaiah and the 5th verse. He says here, for thy maker is thine husband. Yahweh of hosts is his name, and thy redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth, shall he be called. And so the picture is presented to us of God in heaven, desirous of manifesting his glory unto the nations. But how will he do it? He can do it in creation. We can look at it, we can marvel at the stars, at the sun, at the trees, at the grass. We can marvel at the weather. We can marvel at all things. But God wants a living manifestation. He wants people who by reason of their own free will are prepared to manifest his glory. And so what did he do? He selected a nation. He selected the nation of Israel. And he says, I am going to be your husband. I am going to marry you. And I am going to put on a feast to all these nations. And you are going to be the crowning element of my glory. And so what did he do? He sent unto them the prophet. King Ahasuerus sent 7 chamberlains. 7 is the number of completion. Notice the names of the chamberlains. Mehuman means faithful. Bithzar means a eunuch. Habona means an ass driver. Bigthar means a gardener. Abagtha means happy. Zithar means a star. And Karkath means an eagle. You mightn't have got all those down just at the moment, but don't worry, there'll be some notes coming out in due course and you can get a copy of them then. But if you notice those names, it doesn't take much to see that all these symbols are related to Israel. The eunuch, the ass driver. Israel is symbolised by an ass. The eagle. These men symbolise the messengers which God sent unto his people. And what was the result? Turn to the book of Chronicles. Turn to the second of Chronicles, chapter 36. And we find, in literal terms, exactly the same thing which we see depicted in Esther chapter 1. Second of Chronicles, chapter 36, verses 15 and 16. The 36th chapter of Chronicles, verse 15. And Yahweh, the God of their fathers, sent to them by his messengers, rising up big times and sending, because he had compassion on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked the messengers of God, they despised his words, and they misused his prophets, until the wrath of Yahweh rose against his people, till there was no remedy. And what happened in the case of Vashti? He sent the messengers, he pleaded with them, he pleaded with Vashti, he refused, his wrath came up to such a state that there was no remedy but to divorce her. And so the picture presented is a very interesting one. He goes into consultation with his seven princes. We are told that these princes are those men who saw the face of the king. They saw the face of the king. And these represent to us the angelic messengers. These who are at the present time ruling over the affairs of this earth. Those with whom Yahweh conferred in the carrying out of his purpose with this earth. Their names signify Kashina, spoiling of war. Shetha, a commander. Admatha, God-given. Tarshish, breaking or subjection. Merez, lofty. Marcina, worthy. Menuhin, dignified. And you see how these names fit in with the more elevated position of these princes, of the angelic host with whom Yahweh conferred in the carrying out of his purpose with the earth. And so the decision was made. The background of the times is also quite interesting. We read that when Darius came to the throne, that they overthrew the false Smyrna. And they were desirous that no one king could ever rise to a position of complete autocracy. And so there were these seven princes who were instrumental in overthrowing the false Smyrna. And they decided that whichever one of them should become the king, the others would always have the right of access to the king's presence. At any time they liked, they could gain access into the king's presence. And so these men, we are told here, saw the face of the king. And in the type, they fit the angelic host. And so, because of the action of the nation, they were divorced. Israel then is represented as the bride of Yahweh. She was called upon to reveal his praise and his glory. Isaiah tells us of this in the 43rd chapter and at the 7th verse. If we've got any doubt as to whether these pictures fit, Isaiah chapter 43 and verse 7. Everyone that is called by my name, I have created him for my glory. I have formed him, yea, I have made him. And this was the purpose of the call of Israel. This was why she became Yahweh's bride. She was called upon to reveal his praise and glory, but she refused to hear. Turn over to Jeremiah chapter 13 and read verse 11. And once again we are given a picture of this rebellious, this conceited, and this proud nation. Jeremiah chapter 13 and verse 11. For as the girdle cleaveth to the loins of a man, so have I caused to cleave unto me the whole house of Israel and the whole house of Judah, saith Yahweh, that they might be unto me for a people and for a name and for a praise and for a glory, but they would not hear. Now we could go on and we could look up quote after quote, but we're not going to. And so the only thing which God could do was to divorce them. How could God claim to being a God of justice. This was the very thing that Israel in a few years' time was going to argue about. Malachi, give us a God of justice, they would say. How could God claim to be just if he would overlook such a flagrant act of disobedience as Vashti manifested? An act of disobedience which is the greatest that any living person can act against God. They refused to acknowledge his glory. They were self-centered. They were self-seeking. And they desired to manifest their own glory and yet trapped themselves justifying it by saying, we think we are doing what is right. And you know, the lesson comes home to us very forcibly. Because although in the first instance, Vashti is a symbol to us of fleshly Israel who has been cast off, that generation has been cast off because of their disobedience. You know, the same principles in our life. And I think perhaps we might judge Vashti a little bit too harshly. Because, you know, a lot of us might be Vashti. What was she doing? Let's consider it. She was putting on a feast. She was doing it at the same time as her husband. She was probably saying similar things to what her husband was saying. But she should have been reflecting the words of her husband. You know, God's given us a word. And sometimes we say, look, we don't need to read that word. It's only a matter of leading a good life. It's not this study of the word that counts. It's a matter of doing what is right. It's a matter of doing what is right. But how can you do what is right if you don't know what to do? The mind of the flesh, which is the mind that every one of us has got, is naturally alien to the truth. And the mind of the flesh will naturally reason things out, and we can convince ourselves that we're doing things that are right. And yet, it is the work of the flesh, and basically, we're seeking our own glory. We're trying to earn a place in the kingdom. We're trying to manifest our glory instead of reflecting the glory of our husband. And so what do? The answer is to completely submerge our identity in that of our husband. This is the commission which Paul gives to wives. Wives, be in subjection to your husband. He is the head. He is the leader. He is the directing force. He says, be in subjection. Reflect his attributes. But what was Vashti doing? Oh no, we get on a lot better if we go our own way. And this is what Israel did. And we, as far as God is concerned, could be doing the same thing. If that is the case, brethren and sisters, then the verdict which God passed upon Israel, the verdict which Darius passed upon Vashti, is the same one as will be passed upon us. Divorce her, and get another bride which is more in keeping with my glory. Now the picture at this stage is a dismal one. But what, God willing, we plan to do tomorrow morning is, I believe, one of the most beautiful exhortations which are contained in the Scripture. Because by contrast with Esther chapter 1, of the beautiful but the rebellious bride, Esther now presents to us a picture, a detailed picture, of the preparation of the true bride, as the characteristics of that bride which is fit for a king. And how pointedly the lesson comes home to each one of us. And we would recommend that in our preparation for this, that every one of us read Esther chapter 2. In the meantime, let us heed the warning of the downfall of Vashti. Remember that our position of honour and glory is only because of our husband. Let us make sure that we at all times reflect his glory by reading and studying his word and by manifesting in our lives his attributes unto the nations.